Several of you are already aware of who Michael Ord is and some of the things that he has done, but I suspect there may be some of you who do not know, and so I want to rehearse a few details to give you some background on what he has been a part of and to give you some ideas to where he's coming from. He has a Bachelor of Science and a Master of Science degree in Atmospheric Science from the University of Washington. He was a research meteorologist for 6 years at the University of Washington. In 2001, he retired as lead forecaster with the National Weather Service in Great Falls, Montana. Since then, he's been doing full-time research in creationist earth science. And he became interested in creationism after reading Whitcomb and Morris's The Genesis Flood in the early 1970s. And felt like, based on his experience and study and his desire, he wanted to have something to contribute to this kind of new and growing field of creation studies and some of the apologetics there. And so he began doing some work on Ice Age studies. And the first paper on the Ice Age was published in 1979 in the Creation Research Society Quarterly, and has since published many more things. He's published 8 papers or technical monographs on the secular technical literature of the American Meteorological Association and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. And if you're not into those things, it's good to know that somebody is to handle those details. Since becoming a creationist, he has published about 200 articles in the creationist technical literature and has authored, co-authored, or been editor of 14 published creationist books for different ages on the flood, the ice age, weather, geology, and national park guides. He's on the board of Creation Research Society. And since he has a weather background, if you have any complaints about the weather, feel free to talk to him afterward. He'll see what he can do. He's been married to his wife, Beverly, for over 40 years. They have 4 grown children with 10 grandchildren, and all but the youngest live in Bozeman, Montana. So he comes from a bit of a distance to come and share with us now. We're looking forward to your sharing with us.
Since he mentioned the weather, I'm retired, so I'm not responsible anymore. Well, how many were here in Sunday school? The vast majority of you. So, okay. Well, as you know, I'm an adjunct speaker for Creation Ministries International, which is a faith-based information and equipping ministry supported almost totally by donations. They're located in 7 countries and been around for over 30 years, but under different names. And we've been publishing Creation Magazine for over 33 years, and the Journal of Creation, which is the more in-depth journal, for over 25 years. As the pastor said, I've been a researcher, both in a secular researcher, but I've mainly been a weather forecaster. I got tired of research. Debugging computer programs wasn't my thing. But I've been doing creation research for almost 40 years. 90% of the reading I do is in secular earth science journals, mainly geology and geophysics. And I've learned to separate the raw data from the interpretations. That's what you got to do when you're reading secular earth science journals. Sometimes it's difficult. But as a researcher, I've seen a lot of changes in this field. There's lots of resources. When I first got into here, there was hardly anything. But now we got a wealth, an overwhelming amount of resources. I've tried to keep up. I'm publication chairman of the Creation Research Society. I'm supposed to keep up on this, on what's out and what's coming out. And I can't do that anymore. There's just so much stuff. And we actually need a lot more, by the way. Anyway, here's some of the resources we have. We have our website. It's creation.com is the easy way to remember it. And this is a website that has 800 articles. Now, these articles, usually we don't put the articles published in the last 2 years on that are published in our journals. But anyway, you can get 8,000 articles on practically every imaginable subject. I mean, you can type in dinosaurs. We have lots of stuff on dinosaurs. You can probably get over 200 articles just on dinosaurs. We also have a free online newsletter called InfoBytes. And the point of this is to alert you about hot-button topics that come up in the culture. And, you know, it makes the news, the front page, like the new ape man found in Africa, for instance. You know, we'll alert everybody. And this is all goes all over the world. And it'll have a one-paragraphed article on it. Then it'll send you to the website for more in-depth. We also talk about new resources and specials on this. And to aid you in signing up for this, we've developed a special method to keep a jam up from at the tables back there. So we'll be sending around sign-up sheets. So if you're interested in signing up on this free email newsletter, it comes out about once every week or once every 2 weeks. And so when you men, please come forward and just put your information on that, mainly your email address. Because it is a free online newsletter. Oh, thank you. Yes. I found it's kind of warm here. You know, I live in the area that was glaciated at one time. Great place to do Ice Age research. So I will... here's an example of what you would read on here. Remember Crocodile... No, it's not Crocodile Dundee. Steve Irwin, the Crocodile Man. He was killed by a stingray. So lots of people ask, well, you know, why did God create stingrays to kill people? So it got into this whole thing about sin and death, and, you know, so he sent out an InfoBytes alert to everybody on this topic. So it's just an example. Oh, here's how you fill it out. Just... So that sign in your information there and give your email address. So I will continue my talk. This is going to be about almost a summary of 40 years of research. The Ice Age, only the Bible can explain it. A pretty controversial subtitle there, but I will flesh it out and show you how it all fits in. Anyway, as a researcher, I've discovered hundreds of earth science challenges. Maybe you've discovered some of these challenges also. Here's, in about 5 minutes, I wrote down about 20 here. How does the flood cover Mount Everest? You know, you get all kinds of them. Many of these are easy to answer. We have answers for many of these, of which the answers book out there talks about 60 of them and gives you answers. So here's... Others here, I'm not going to go into any of these. Some of these I've dealt with myself, like the millions of mammoths in Siberia and Alaska is what I talked about in the Sunday school. The Ice Age is one of these mysteries, which was in my field of atmospheric science, so this is the first one I dealt with. I've since moved on to the flood, so I do more things on the flood now than the Ice Age. But so the Ice Age is a major mystery. What is an Ice Age? An ice age is a great increase of snow and ice, essentially. 10% of the continental areas are covered by ice and snow right now, mainly Antarctica and Greenland. During the Ice Age, 30% of the continental areas were covered by ice, mainly in the high and mid-latitudes of the Northern Hemisphere, the mountains of South America, and, of course, Antarctica. It's the last major event in Earth history, the last major geophysical event in Earth history. So... I'm going to bring out a point on this towards the end, so remember that it's the last major event out of hundreds of major events that they claim through billions of years of Earth history in their timescale. Here's the challenge of the Ice Age. This is how they challenge us. East Ice Age is supposed to take 100,000 years. The glacial phase is claimed to take 90,000 years. The interglacial phase is 10,000. Now, we're in an interglacial phase. These ice ages are still continuing, they say. We're in an interglacial between ice ages called the Holocene. And there's been 30. Actually, that's been changed to 50 regularly repeating ice ages during the past 2.5 million years. So that's the challenge that they give us. And here's a quote by an anti-creationist, Arthur Strahler. And this is where they decided that the Antarctic ice sheet was 10 times the age that they previously thought. By the way, the ages of these things always vary with time. All the time they're changing the ages of these things. So suddenly Antarctica became 10 times. So he says this in his book. Increasing the duration of the ice age by a factor of about 10 greatly increases the stress upon the creation scientists, who must compress the events of 15 million years into 4,000 years of post-flood time. Now, I've read a lot of anti-creationist books, and you know, most of the time they get our position wrong. They set up straw man, which is easy to cut down, you see. They don't get our position right, but this guy mostly gets things right, even though he's an atheist. One thing you got right here, it's in post-flood time. It didn't happen during the ice age, during the flood, or before the flood. So, can we explain the ice age in 4,000 years? Well, how do we deal with these challenges? This is one of many. This is my theme verse for research. Examine everything carefully. Hold fast to that which is good. So, I'm going to hold fast to the Bible as God's Word and to Jesus as my Lord and Savior. Then I'm going to examine things and carefully. So, you got to look at the raw data and watch out for those interpretations. Sometimes it's difficult because sometimes the data has interpretations within it. So you got to really be careful when you read secular literature. So that's what I've been doing for 40 years. This is my theme verse for research. In fact, this is a good theme verse for life, for other challenges, dealing with other issues besides these intellectual issues. So based on that, I'm going to answer a series of questions. First question we need to know, was there really an ice age? Am I trying to explain something that really never existed? Well, when you look at the out there on the surface of the earth, you see all these ice age features, which I will show you. And the best place to look at things is in glaciated areas today. And you've heard that, due to global warming, practically all glaciers in the world are receding. That's a true statement. I'll be talking about that Tuesday night here. Is man the cause of global warming? And I'll go, what does the raw data in the literature say about this? And you might be surprised on what it says. But anyway, what does a glacier do? As you see here, it leaves debris out in here. And here's a sharp ridge of debris called a moraine. It's an in-moraine. And along the edges of it, you have lateral moraines right in here. A moraine is formed as the glacier moves out and it melts and it leaves that ridge of debris. Those are moraines. Also, it leaves ground moraine, which is this stuff out in here, which is rocks of all sizes mixed in with sand and smaller pebbles and sometimes silt or clay. So that's what a glacier does. One of the things a glacier does. Now, this glacier was out in here in 1890, right out here near the road, and it's been receding ever since due to global warming, which has actually been slight, I might add, and mostly due to natural processes on the sun. That's kind of a little advertisement for my talk Tuesday night. But anyway, we won't get into global warming. Here I can spend a couple hours getting off on a rabbit trail, but we got to keep to the subject. As I climbed up on the ice sheet, which I do not recommend because it had these big, deep crevasses, there's the lateral moraine, very sharp. You can see some of the big rocks in it. So those are features of glaciated areas. Also, as a glacier moves forward, it has all these rocks in the bottom, and the rocks get scratched, and the bedrock gets scratched. And a lot of times the rock in the ice turns, and so it gets scratches in different directions, like this boulder at the Athabasca Glacier in the Canadian Rockies. See scratches that way and scratches this way. Also, the bedrock was scratched. Usually it's scratched in one direction, but sometimes it can be scratched in different directions also. So, when you take a look at areas not glaciated today, in areas that are pretty hot in the summer where glaciers are very foreign, you find these features. Like west of Great Falls, Montana, where I lived for 27 years forecasting the weather, near the Rocky Mountain front, you find a mound there. Right in here, it's kind of subdued, it's not sharp. And here's the continuation right here, broke through right here, and that's where they put a reservoir. But this is actually a terminal moraine, and you can see the rocks in it, from an ice cap in the Northern Rockies. It came out about 10 miles onto the high plains. And when you look at the moraine, you find rocks of all sizes in a finer grain matrix, just like what you see at the Athabasca Glacier. Also, some of the rocks are scratched and in different directions. Right, one direction there and another right in there. And also the bedrock is scratched. This is up in the Rocky Mountain front. There's an 800-foot cliff right here. And the ice came from west to east out into the high plains, and it scratched this bedrock right in here. So you see all the features of glaciation there, but it gets up to in the 80s there in the summertime. No glacier can survive there. It's mainly the summer temperatures that cause glacial melting. So it'd be very hard for glaciation to occur there in today's climate. And you find, here's an example of terminal moraine in northeast Oregon, the Wallawa Lake. Here's a small end moraine, and here's two lateral moraines coming out from the Wallawa Mountains onto the Enterprise, Oregon, right in here. It's about 4,000 feet above sea level and gets in the low 90s for the average highs in the summertime. And here it came out this way, and it overdeepened this lake. Now, when you get on the surface and look at the lateral moraine, look how sharp that still is. You see the trees for scale. This is 600 feet tall. So the ice in this valley coming out onto that small plain there was probably about 2,000 feet thick. And when you look at the moraine material, it's rocks of all sizes in a finer grain matrix around the rock. Just like you see at previously glaciated areas like at the Athabasca Glacier. So the upshot of all this, when you add up, this is where it was glaciated during the Ice Age. Practically all Canada except the Yukon, lowlands of the Yukon and the lowlands of Alaska, which is a major mystery why the lowlands were not glaciated. Major mystery of the Uniform Material Earth Science. A lot of mountain ranges were glaciated, some in New Mexico, by the way. This is just a schematic. A lot more mountains are glaciated than I show right here. And it covered the northern United States, right in here, down to as far south, they claim, as St. Louis. I don't think it was down that far south, by the way. I think that they're mistaking meltwater features versus a glacial till or glacial debris left directly from the glacier. I think it was further north, but that doesn't matter too much. And in Europe and Asia, it covered most of England, northern Europe, and northwest Siberia, and the Alps, and a lot of other mountain ranges that aren't here. Also the central mountains of Asia, northeast Siberia. So that's 30% of the continents were covered during the Ice Age. That's what the evidence shows. And it's all over by thousands of pieces of evidence showing this occurred. So there was an Ice Age, and we need to explain it by our worldview. Can we explain it? Can they explain it? You know, Arthur Stoller challenged us. You know, when I examine challenges, you know, I examine a lot of challenges. The Lord has led me to examine challenges to us. You know, not necessarily to bash evolution, which is really easy, I found out, because there's hardly any evidence for it when you dig into the data. You know what I found when I examined the challenges they give us? They're challenges to themselves. They have one finger pointed at us, and there's three fingers pointed at themselves. So I found out that these are challenges. So the Ice Age is really a challenge to them also. First of all, to understand whether the challenge, we have to understand what are the requirements for an ice age. The number one requirement, or actually there's two main requirements, is you need cooler summers. Winters in most areas are cool enough. So that's not the issue. In fact, in most areas, the winters should be warmer, which they were in the ice age model I've developed. Also, you need much greater snowfall, so you need much more moisture. And it has to persist for many years. So you need a climate change to cause this. And it has to not just be for 1 year. It has to be for multiple years. So those are the requirements. So let's get into some numbers. How much cooling do we need? Well, I went to Minneapolis, which is on the edge of the ice sheet, on the periphery of the ice sheet, and the June to August average summer temperature in Minneapolis is 70 degrees Fahrenheit. That includes the high and the low, so its average is about 70. So you'd have to cool Minneapolis off at least 50 degrees, or down to freezing 32 degrees. At least 32 degrees average. But because sunlight is the major factor melting snow and ice, you actually have to go below that because you get a lot of sun in spring and summer. And because of that, you have to go well below freezing. So to determine that, I went to the shoreline of Antarctica and found out, when do they get net melting in Antarctica? Well, they get net melting as the temperature warms up to 14 degrees Fahrenheit. That's when they start getting net melting. If anyone's lived at the high in the northern United States, you know that on a spring day, you get a foot of snow. The next day, the high temperature is 20 degrees Fahrenheit, but the snow is melting rapidly. It's because of the sunlight that comes out. So anyway, you'd have to cool Minneapolis off to 14 degrees Fahrenheit. But to be conservative, and to make it round numbers, let's say it only cooled to 20 degrees Fahrenheit for an average summer temperature, 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's a summer drop of 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, where are the uniformitarian scientists going to get a climate change like that? 50 degrees Fahrenheit cooler in the summer. And not only the summer, the early fall and the late spring, the warm season. And, you know, see, they have to rely on present processes of climate change and to determine this. So where are they going to get this? I'd say it's impossible. They're not going to do it, even in billions of years, according to present processes. Now, they can dream up some things due to the Earth's orbital changes, which they have done. But these are small changes, and it doesn't really help much to do this. So they have a major problem. That's why the Ice Age really is a major mystery. And I can get you numerous quotes where they actually admit this. In U.S. News and World Report 1997, they report that the Ice Age, the origin of the Ice Age, is one of the top 18 mysteries of science. So it's a challenge to them. And here's the latest quote, one quote from David Ault, professor of geology at the University of Montana at Missoula, Montana. Glacial Lake Missoula, a 2,000-foot deep lake in the valleys of western Montana that broke and carved up eastern Washington. Glacial Lake Missoula and its humongous floods. He says, although theories abound, no one really knows what causes ice ages. And they have well over 60 theories on the origin of the ice age. In fact, it has almost the amount of theories as the demise of the dinosaurs, which has over 100. Anyway, they can't explain it by present processes of climate. So it's a challenge to them as well as us. So can we explain it? So what you're seeing is 40 years of research based on the biblical worldview. The point of this talk is that we can solve these mysteries. And not only that, we have a method to solve other mysteries that we haven't worked on yet. See, of those hundreds of mysteries, mainly we've answered a lot of them, but there's a lot of them we haven't yet, mainly because no researcher has looked at it in depth yet. That's because there's not a lot of creation researchers out there in earth sciences doing this. That's the only reason. I think if you give us about 50 years, we can answer probably 80% of these mysteries, even though you got to remember, we're not going to be able to answer every question because we weren't there. Earth science is very complicated and difficult, and we're not smart enough to put it all together. So those are the issues. But this one, I believe we have a really good solution based on the biblical worldview. So how can we explain it? The first thing we need to do is, where does it fit within the biblical Earth history? Well, obviously you have those sharp moraines that I showed you, and they couldn't be formed during the flood. So obviously the Ice Age came after the flood, not during the flood, and not before the flood, because the flood would wipe it out if it was before the flood. And the flood had a lot of warm water, so you couldn't have it anyway. And the flood was only a year, so you didn't have enough time anyway. So this is where it fits in. In a transitional climate after the flood, which brings up the question that couldn't the flood maybe have caused the climate change? Could that be so? The flood from the Bible, the global flood? I found it indeed that is so. And I'll get into that. How does the Genesis flood fulfill the requirements for an ice age? First of all, the flood was a gigantic volcanic event. A lot of lava flows, a lot of volcanoes going off. A lot of the sedimentary rocks were once came from volcanoes and have been redeposited by water. So after the flood, you have all this volcanic dust and aerosols trapped in the stratosphere, and that reflects some of the sunlight back to space, cooling the land. It won't cool the water because the water has a high heat capacity, but it'll cool the land, mainly in the summer. Winters will be quite different because there'll be factors that help heat the winters up. So you cool the summers by this volcanic dust and aerosols. Also, the fountains of the Great Deep and volcanism would end up with warmer water, heat up the water. So you'd have warm oceans from pole to pole and top to bottom. You could probably swim in the Arctic Ocean after the flood. There'd be no sea ice. So the point of this is that the warmer the water, the more the evaporation. In fact, at 86 degrees Fahrenheit, you can evaporate 7 times as much water in the atmosphere as a temperature of 32 degrees Fahrenheit for the seawater. Much greater evaporation. And this evaporation would be mostly at mid and high latitudes where the sea surface temperature would be a lot warmer during the ice age than today. In the tropics, it's about the same. So you'd have massive evaporation at mid and high latitudes and cooler land. So the evaporation occurs close to where the snow dumps rapidly on the land. Also, the mechanism will persist, but it'll wane with time as the oceans cool. The oceans are the key. As the oceans cool, you have less evaporation, so you come to a point where it can't add the moisture it needs, so you end up getting melting. So the oceans cooling, that provides the timing of all this. So I worked out the details in the 1980s. And here's a few schematics on reflection of some of the sunlight back to space due to volcanic dust and aerosols. Aerosols are fine little particles about a millionth of a meter in diameter. And now these fall out gradually over 1 to 3 years. So they need to be replenished by post-flood volcanism, which we have evidence of a lot of it during the Ice Age. All these stratovolcanoes you see on the Earth are post-flood volcanoes mostly. Some of them probably started in the flood. I discovered recently that the major eruptions of Yellowstone National Park were actually during the flood. I have some hardcore evidence for that, which I'm going to publish here when I write it up soon. I hope to do that this summer. But anyway, it's admitted by J.K. Charlesworth, where he says in his book of the Quaternary Era, a 1,600-page book on the Ice Age, says signs of Pleistocene, translating that means Ice Age, that's Pleistocene and Quaternary, are their Ice Age periods. Signs of Ice Age volcanicity and earth movements are visible in all parts of the world. So you had a lot of pulse-filled volcanism to recharge the stratosphere with ash and aerosols to keep the cooling trend going. So it kind of works like this. You have warm oceans, powerful evaporation in the mid and high latitudes, a volcanic dust in the upper atmosphere reflecting some of the sunlight back, cooling the land, and you have a rapid dump of snow and ice in huge, powerful storms. Cold land. I worked out a lot of the details in a book that is now out of print. Anyway, the next question is, we have a great mechanism for the Ice Age. How fast was it? Do we need 100,000 years for it? No. This is my evidence that it was rapid. This is Ed Jenkins. Indisputable proof that the Ice Age caught these people completely off guard. I have a few of these cartoons in my talks. You got to have a light sense of humor in all this stuff because, you know, I read a lot of stuff that's pretty anti-Christian, and so you got to have a light heart and all this stuff. But anyway, to get more serious, I had to determine, what I did was I used the equations for the cooling of the ocean. They're called budget equations. You add up all the heating terms, subtract the cooling terms, and you get a change in temperature, change in time. So if you can estimate the change in temperature, you solve for change in time, you see. So I had to estimate the temperature change. And so to do that, I had to figure out what was the average temperature after the flood at the beginning of the Ice Age. Well, I just did it by a real crude method. I said that we had a lot of mechanisms to heat the ocean water. In fact, overheat it. the mechanisms of the flood. So it can't get too hot, or it's going to kill all those animals we observe in there. So I figured it can't be over 30 degrees centigrade on the average. There are cool pockets and warm pockets. 30 degrees centigrade is about 86 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's what I estimated that the ocean temperature was at the end of the flood. So at the the ice reached glacial maximum. By the way, the average temperature of the ocean now is 4 degrees centigrade. And we don't have ice sheets today, except for Antarctica and Greenland. So obviously, it starts melting well before the temperature of the ocean reaches 4 degrees centigrade. I estimate about 10 degrees centigrade. So that's a drop of 30 to 10. That's 20 degrees centigrade, which is 38 degrees Fahrenheit. That's my temperature change. So solving those equations, now there's no way to be exact. So what I did was I used minimum estimates and maximum estimates. And I took the best estimate. It's because I just wanted a ballpark figure. There's no way to be accurate because we weren't there. We didn't observe the post-flood ice age climate. So this is the range I got. As short as 297 years, as long as 1,765. The best estimate, about 500 years, to reach glacial maximum. And in that time, I had to estimate the amount of ice that would fall on land. And so I did that by using maximum and minimums from the moisture sources. The main moisture source is the warm ocean, but you have a moisture source from low latitudes by high latitude transport of moisture. Anyway, to give you not go into the details, this is my range for the northern hemisphere. Where I live in Montana, the ice sheet was actually very shallow because we had a lot of mountain ranges and plateaus sticking up out of the ice in northern Montana and southern Alberta. So it was very thin. In New England, it looks like it was pretty thick. But that's what you'd expect because we're in an inland area away from the moisture source and probably away from the storm tracks. Well, New England is close to storm tracks in the warm ocean, so you'd expect it to be thicker there. So the average is about 2,330 feet. For Antarctica, there's the range. The best estimate is about 4,000 feet. And then you have to melt it. So I used the energy balance over snow and ice cover, which is just plain physics. The same thing, you add up the heating terms, subtract the cooling terms, and you get a melting out of that. And so I found, using ranges for the variables, one of them is the reflectivity. The snow is a big variable. Reflectivity changes radically, quickly on short time scales. Fresh snow reflects about 90% of the sunlight back to space. Old snow will reflect only maybe about 40%. So you have to consider these. So the ranges, that's why you have a range of 40 to 100 years. The best estimate along the edge is 70 years. But interior Canada and Scandinavia would be slower. So it would take about 200 years to melt there. So the total time for the post-flood ice age is only 700 years. So this is an example of how we use different assumptions, biblical worldview assumptions, and get a totally different result. So we don't need 100,000 years. And this is an example of how we can solve other major mysteries, as I'll mention. Okay, what's going on here? Now the next question. They claim there are now 50 ice ages. In the last million years, they repeated every 100,000 years. Between 2.6 and 1 million years, they repeated every 40,000 years, they claim. And this is based mainly on deep sea cores, you know, ocean bottom sediments, because you don't see these things on land, by the way. And so there's lots of assumptions in all this, and I've gone through details of this stuff, published a lot of articles, and I'm going to work on an e-book summarizing this because my in-depth book is out of print, and I'm going to amplify all this stuff and go into a lot of other areas in a long e-book on the subject research project for the next 2 years. But was there more than one ice age? Well, here's a quote from a group of researchers from the University of Alberta in Edmonton, published in the journal called Geology. Notice the title of that, A Single Late Wisconsin Laurentide Glaciation, Edmonton Area and Southwest Alberta. They used to think there were 3 to 4 ice ages there, In fact, before they believed in 50 ice ages, they believed there were four ice ages for 60 years. Everywhere they went, they saw four ice ages. But you know, that is an example of what's called the reinforcement syndrome or circular reasoning, because that's exactly what they expected. That's exactly what they saw. There's a huge amount of circular reasoning in earth sciences where they assume old ages and they assume certain things, and that's exactly what they find. That is rampant in earth sciences and like the ice age. So they believe three or four here. But when they looked at that real debris, they only see evidence of one translating. It occurred in what's called the late Wisconsin period, which is very late in their time scale, and it's called the Laurentide because that's the ice sheet that occurred in central and eastern Canada and the northern United States east of the Rocky Mountains. So they believe in now one. And notice what they say here. Glacial reconstructions commonly assume a multiple glaciation hypothesis in all areas that contain a till cover. Till is a jargon for glacial debris. So they've essentially assumed multiple glaciations. There's a whole history behind this where the Ice Age, when they first discovered it in the 1840s, it was a radical assault on uniformitarianism, which present is the key to the past, because then when they came up with all these ice, they say, we don't have ice ages here today, but they were here recently. This was an assault on uniformitarianism. But then to make it more sound like uniformitarianism, they decided, well, we're going to believe in more than one, because then it sounds like business as usual. And that's what they want, business as usual, that we're in an interglacial now, and the next glaciation is about to hit us. So it's an assumption. The evidence in practically all areas is for one glaciation. Now, along the edges, you find the complications, and that's where they claim multiple glaciations mainly. And that's where the ice sheet would move, would surge and melt back, and you'd get multiple glacial debris areas with maybe some sand in between. And then it'd come out again and lay more glacial debris, and each one of those glacial debris areas would be a separate glaciation. But the more they know about glaciation, the more they realize that edges of ice sheets oscillate a lot. And so you can explain all these features on the edges by just one ice sheet. So these are new developments. Will there be a future ice age? There's no reason why we should be out of the glacial, interglacial cycles. So here's why they believe this. We're still in it. We're in an interglacial. They last about 10,000 years. And guess what? The last ice age melted 10,000 years ago. So we're about due. How many remember that in the 1970s, we had a little bit of global cooling when CO2 was going up? We had global cooling. Actually, from the end of World War II to about the mid-1970s, about 25 years or so, we had global cooling. And several books came out saying the new ice age is coming. Anyone remember that stuff? I think Time and Newsweek jumped on it, and so it made a big splash because of that little bit of global cooling. And even one guy wrote a book on that, you know, saying all these scary things that are going to occur, drought and all that. Well, when it became global warming after that, he wrote another book, and he just saying this almost the same things, but due to global warming. It's pretty entertaining. I have those books. I have three of those books, by the way. It's very interesting to look at those. Anyway, I will, Tuesday night, I will actually show the covers of two of those books. And here is a quote in the New York Times by Daniel Grossman in 2003. If the past is any indication, the Earth is at the end of another such warm period, that is an interglacial, poised to descend into a new ice age. Ah, you do believe everything you read in the newspapers, don't you? I'm being pretty facetious on this. I was in a hunting accident. I wasn't the one in the accident. I was helping a guy. And when they reported it 2 days later, they had every single detail wrong. I'm sure many of you have had these experiences before. Anyway, the new ice age is about to occur. But you know, we can breathe easy because the flood caused the ice age. And the rainbow promise is that there will never be another flood. And if there's not going to be another flood, there's not going to be another ice age because the flood caused the ice age. And that's why the Bible it really explains the Ice Age because of the flood. In summary, the Ice Age was a real event and not that long ago. The scratched bedrock is still pretty fresh. The moraines are still pretty sharp. So it wasn't that long ago. And it's post-flood. It's also a major mystery of evolutionary Earth science. Noah's flood caused a transitional climate for an ice age. The ice age lasted only 700 years. That's a rough approximation, by the way. We don't need 100,000 years for one ice age. And there was only one ice age. So ultimately, only the Bible explains the ice age because of the flood. And there will be no future ice age. So you don't have to worry about those scare tactics that they use in the newspaper. It's kind of getting unpopular lately because the scare tactics now is that we're going to burn up the earth and the only place we're going to be able to live is in Antarctica when the ice sheet melts. Yeah, I've seen quotes like this before. You see all kinds of radical things on global warming out there. A concluding thought. Us creationists, based on our biblical worldview, have a viable mechanism for the last major event in Earth history, a major mystery that's been around for over 150 years, while evolutionary scientists are far from a solution. Okay, we can explain the last major event. They can't. Then why should we believe for all those older events that they claim in the rocks and fossils? The demise of the dinosaurs, the evolutionary progression of various organisms that live and die. I mean, there's hundreds of these so-called events in their Earth history. Why should we believe any of it if they can't even explain the last event? Another concluding thought. The Ice Age is an example of what can be done with the hundreds of other Earth science challenges to the Bible, and even challenges in biology and astronomy. By the way, most our evidence for creation, science is strongest in biology. The complexity of the cell, I mean, it just blows your mind when you read this stuff. Blows my mind. Our strongest evidence is there. We're weaker in earth science. That's why I went into more in earth sciences, because of the weakness we had 40 years ago. Astronomy, we're getting a lot of people working in that and getting some great ideas and getting a lot of stuff that's of a lot of interest. Some great DVDs out are by The Heavens Declare by Spike Saris that just will blow your socks off on all the evidence we have in astronomy. We don't have them out there. You can order them on some of the websites. Anyway, I want to say that how I went about the Ice Age is how you can solve these other Earth science mysteries, which I'm working on a lot of those, by the way. Also, time is not a side issue. This is a point I made with the woolly mammoth. But a shortened, younger time scale sometimes is the key to solving major mysteries that have lasted over 150 years. Well, how does that work with the Ice Age? Well, they know that volcanism causes cooling because we've observed that by historical eruptions like Krakatoa when it went off in 1893, Tambora in Indonesia in 1815. But all this volcanism that occurred during the Ice Age is stretched out to thousands of years. So it becomes insignificant because the debris from that, the ash and aerosols, fall out in 1 to 3 years, you see. But if we telescope all that volcanism within a couple hundred years, it becomes a powerful cooling mechanism. So that's why the short time scale is key to solving major mysteries of the past, which the Ice Age is one of their top 18 mysteries of all science, according to U.S. News and World Report. Another concluding thought. The Ice Age is based on the flood. The flood caused the climate change for the Ice Age. Therefore, the flood, one of the most despised events in the culture, is a real event of the past. We can believe the whole Bible if we can believe the flood, which tells us how to live here on earth and how to go to heaven.